creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
It's a seasonal tradition celebrated from couches to stadiums nationwide. On this episode of Culture Click, we better prepare you for football season with an intro to understanding the game. We'll go over commonly heard terminology, what formations are, and more. If you've been going to football parties and not really understanding what is happening other than touchdown, then keep listening and be informed. You're listening to Culture Click with Terry Tenseth. Hi, you're listening to our football special, Football 411, or Football 101, and today I have two authorities on the subject matter. Tell us who you are and why you're an authority on it.
My name is Doug Westerman. I'm the general manager at KQL. I'm a freelance producer for Compass Media Networks, producing college football games on the weekends.
I'm Chris Wanless. I do the color commentary on KQAL every Saturday for the Winona State football team, and I also have about 8 years of playing experience.
Great. Well, gentlemen, you're not talking to the football fans per se, but the people who want to understand more about football. So I think we understand the object of the game is to outscore another team, right? But there's different players on the field, and each has a purpose. So let's go ahead and explain that first. Who would like to take it?
I will start with the offense and then hand it off to you for the defense, because you're a defensive back. Chris was a defensive back here at Winona State for a while. The offense, you have five offensive linemen. The center snaps the ball. On either side of him are two guards. On either side of the two guards are the two tackles. The two guards and two tackles do a lot of the grind them up, kind of working man type things to create holes for running backs. And then they also pass block for the quarterback in passing situations. The two tackles are very important on passing situations, depending if you have a right-handed or left-handed quarterback, because that's the person that usually gets the most pressure when rushers are coming from one side or the other, that is protecting literally the quarterback's back. So they have to have his back literally. Okay. Then you break down to the specialists, and everyone knows the quarterback calls the plays and runs the offense for the team, and then you have a certain number of either wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs to run, catch, or throw the ball.
Great.
How's that?
I always laugh when I hear the word tight end. Can you explain that one a little bit more?
The tight end lines up on either side of the tackle, and I think where you're going isn't where we want to go. But I don't know the origin of the name. Okay. Although he's lined up tight to the line, to the formation. Nothing to do with his wardrobe.
Defensively, you can kind of think of it in three different levels. The first level being the defensive line, which the interior portion of that is the defensive tackles. They're more responsible for stopping running plays by the offense. And then the defensive ends have to be a little bit more athletic. They're generally more used in a pass rush situation where you're trying to get pressure on the quarterback. The second level is going to be your linebackers, who are more athletic than the defensive linemen, but not as athletic as the defensive backs that we'll talk about. The linebackers basically have to be able to come up from their spot and stop any running plays, but they also have to be quick enough so that they can defend any passing plays from the offense. And then the defensive backs, who, of course I'm biased, but they're probably the most athletic people on the defense, generally used more in pass coverage. They have to make sure that none of the receivers can get down the field and, you know, give up any big plays for the offense.
One thing he didn't mention, where defensive backs are usually, they used to be wide receivers, but they can't catch the ball.
That is not true.
A little humor. Mm-hmm. Is that what's happening?
Little inside football humor. Sorry, we got to keep this at the 101 level.
So now you've got all your players like in a chess game, mm-hmm. right? So let's talk about different theories of handling a game. You've talked about running plays. Mm-hmm. You've talked about passing plays. What are those?
I'll let Chris, the more true expert, kind of break down what the philosophy is, you know, through a course of a play on offense.
Well, obviously, a running play is where the quarterback is going to take the snap and either hand the ball off to his running back, a fullback, doesn't really make a difference. Either way, that person is then obviously going to run with the ball. And what it comes down to basically on a running play is a lot of times it can be what kind of or how many yards you need to pick up on a play. If you need maybe 1 to 4 yards, a running play is going to be pretty effective because you've got your big offensive lineman in front of you pushing the other guys out of the way. And so, you know, in short yardage situations like that, you're going to want to run the ball. Passing plays are more effective for A, if you need more yardage, B, if you want to move the ball quicker, because obviously you're going to be able to throw the ball a lot further and a lot in a lot shorter time than you would be able to run it on the ground.
Then basically, when you're sitting down watching a game, and if let's using college as an example, they're starting off at the 25-yard line. They want to get a first down. You know, generally speaking, not all the time. This is all very general. You know, they're going to start with a running play, get 2 or 3 yards, kind of check out the situation. Second down, 7 yards to get a first down. Maybe we'll run it again. Okay, then they may get the first down or it may end up a little bit short. Then on third down, they have the option of, okay, doing a short pass or try running again. So, I mean, it's all dependent on your talent of your people that you have and the kind of plays your offensive coordinator likes to run in particular situations.
Now, a lot of times while you're doing these plays, you get stopped and there's a flag thrown. What are the reasons for flags getting thrown and what are they?
There are several. On your basic offensive ones before play starts is usually like an offsides. A lineman or a wide receiver or somebody jumps and moves before the ball is supposed to be snapped, which is called the quarterback's count. Then in the course of a play, an offensive player, usually a lineman but not exclusively, may be caught for a holding penalty, okay? Holding his defender where you're supposed to block, there's just little techniques in terms of blocking and what you can grab and what you can't grab. If somebody is going after Jack Nelson, our quarterback, it's not unusual for the tackle to reach around and grab him before his quarterback gets hit and then intentionally get called for a penalty. It's very subtle, okay? It's hard to pick up, but sometimes they actually hold on purpose. Normally they don't. What else can happen on offense? You've got offensive pass interference, chop blocks, which are illegal blocks thrown by usually wide receivers or people running downfield trying to block because they're trying to protect the player's lower body, most often protecting the knees is what I'm trying to say. And those are what I can think of on offense. Is that about everything?
Delay of game. There's a certain amount of time between each play that the offense has to get their play called and then get up to the line of scrimmage and then snap the ball. And that's kept track by a play clock on the field, and if that hits zero before the ball is snapped, that's called delay of game, and that's just a 5-yard penalty. Pretty general rule.
And then tell us how the defense cheats and gets penalties.
On the defensive side of the ball, usually on the defensive side of the ball, you're going to see offsides, which is, again, basically a player either lined up over the ball, which is obviously illegal, or a player jumping onto the offensive side of the ball before the snap. There's pass interference, like we mentioned. It's a lot more commonly called on the defense. Basically, with that, while the ball is in the air when it's being passed, the defensive player can't impede the offensive player's ability to go and catch the ball. A lot of them you can translate to both sides of the ball. Holding, obviously, if you grab onto a player's jersey or part of his body, you're going to get called for holding, but again, I'm biased. I sometimes think there's a lot more consequence to defensive penalties than there are on offensive penalties. But in general, a lot of things can be translated to both sides of the ball.
And then on special teams, I think the biggest note for the most basic fan is you don't touch the punter, you don't touch the kicker. Then there's just different variable penalties there, depending on how severe it is. If the punter has kicked the ball and his landing foot is off the ground still and he gets run into, probably a 15-yard penalty. Say Chris is blocking for the punter and I push Chris into his punter, that'd be a 5-yard penalty. And again, it comes back just to some subtleties and the referees have to decide. And then place kickers, you don't touch them either. And the person holding the ball, you can't mow them over on extra points or field goals.
So penalties, what else can you get penalized for? Unsportsmanlike, going for the helmet.
There's things that happen on the field that I think you can cover better, but like coaches can get penalties for just barking generally too much at the referees. They can get unsportsmanlike conduct penalties for that. But what other unsportsmanlike things can happen with coaches? And that's about it.
Yeah.
There's illegal substitutions, which is very subtle and doesn't happen very often. That's ruled an unsportsmanlike conduct because each team can only have 11 players on the field. If you try and sneak a 12th one on, that's cheating.
As far as unsportsmanlike conduct, a lot of things can happen. I mean, football is a very emotional game. You know, if you've ever played or, you know, if you've ever watched, people obviously get very emotional. But taunting is a big one that's been kind of a point of emphasis over the years. You're not allowed to get in the other team's face, so to speak, after a big play. A lot of things go on at the bottom of piles that I'm not going to get into right now because I think this is a family program. So,
like, whenever there's a fumble recovered, some people do very unmentionable men do other unmentionable things to other men in order to maybe have them release the ball that they had just recovered. Yeah. Hands go where they shouldn't go. And Chris is a professional and I'm not, so that's why I said it.
I thought those were cups for that.
That's another misnomer. From pretty much college on, players don't wear cups. Chris is nodding. You just can't see it because we're on the radio.
I have nothing to add to that.
How come you don't get a penalty for hurting somebody in the knees, which I think is a really bad situation, versus, okay, you can't grab the helmet?
Well, this has been a really hot topic over the past 2 or 3 years, especially in the NFL, but they're really concerned with players' head safety, first and foremost. The concussions have been a huge problem, especially in the pros, and now you're starting to see it kind of go down into the college level. It's definitely a good debate topic to have, whether you're going to not allow people to hit other people in the head, which is going to make them go lower. So now I think you're going to start seeing more knee injuries, which have proven in the past to be more likely to end somebody's career. But basically, in general, it's just that they want to protect people's noggins. They don't want people to get concussions. And as long as they can do that, I don't think they're really going to pass any kind of legislation, so to speak, on the lower parts of the body.
All right, so let's get into a little bit more theory, shall we? I've got some questions from the general public.
Okay.
I have some of my own. There are certain formations, and you will hear the word formation,
yes,
on the TV, and it almost looks like a little field marching things going on there on the field. If you could go ahead over some of the common formations, pistol, eye, nickel, dime, I'm probably missing some, and paint a picture.
Okay, on the offense, a real basic setting is an eye formation that you mentioned. Okay, that's the quarterback. He is standing underneath the center. His hands are ready to take the snap, and behind him, there's usually one or two running backs, okay? The classic eye formation, there's two running backs. You have the halfback who has his hands on his knees. Then you have the fullback who's down in a three-point stance, who more than likely is going to be blocking for the halfback who's going to get the handoff. Okay, in that eye formation, you may have a tight end on one side and two wide receivers. Then you get into the other formations where the quarterback is not under the center. He's standing back a certain distance. Shotgun snap is about 5 yards. He may have a running back to either side of him. And then you're going to deploy a certain number of receivers and tight ends into a pass pattern. Doesn't mean you can't run out of the shotgun, but more often than not, it's a passing formation. Then there's the pistol formation, which is relatively new, 5 years or less. That's actually looks almost like an eye formation, but the quarterback is removed from the center by 3 yards, and there's a running back directly behind him. So now you're giving off a look to the defense that you a look that could be more surprising because they could run and or still pass because it looks more traditional despite the fact it's a shorter shotgun snap. Those are pretty much the three basics. Did I miss anything on offense?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then you have defense.
Defensively, basically what you're going to see is either a 3-4 or a 4-3, meaning there's either going to be three down defensive linemen and four linebackers or four defensive linemen and three linebackers. And if you do the math correctly, which I think I am, that leaves four spots on the field for defensive backs.
Good college education.
Now, you mentioned the words nickel and dime, and those things have to do with how many defensive backs you have on the field. If you're going to be a nickel, that means five defensive backs, because a nickel is 5 cents, obviously.
And then they usually remove a linebacker or a lineman?
A linebacker most times. And then when you're in dime, you're going to have six defensive backs, which it doesn't make sense because a dime is worth 10 cents. But a dime is more than a nickel, and six is more than five. That's why they call it that. But in that situation, you're going to usually take off a linebacker and a defensive lineman, and then you're going to have six defensive backs on the field.
Any other formations?
Those are the basics, I think, are probably easiest for people to see when they're watching or listening to a game. Yeah. Am I missing anything? No?
Can people come up with formations of their own, or is that like considered not ethical?
Well, no, I mean, what happens is a lot of these formations that we've discussed on offense, you know, your traditionals and things like that, but it's also you may see a team like the New England Patriots in the NFL or the Oregon Ducks in college football. They may come up with some really unique variations where the quarterback is in the shotgun and he may have all three wide receivers bunched over on one side of the field or tied up against the line and things like that. You know, that just kind of takes time to figure out as a fan because it's very subtle and it's very non-traditional. But those things kind of happen and we'd be here for hours.
Okay. The term eight men in a box. You'll hear that from time to time. What is the box? And what's the purpose?
Okay. When you hear the term the box, you look at the defensive linemen on the field and the linebackers, and you can draw a box around the area that they're standing in before the play starts. So that's the box.
An imaginary box.
Yes. They don't do it for you. So basically, then having eight men in the box, because like we talked about, there would usually be seven already in that box. Basically, you're going to bring a defensive back, usually a safety, down into that same area, and that's going to give you eight men in the box. And the purpose of that is usually if you think the offense is going to be running the football, you want to have more people closer to the line of scrimmage to kind of limit the success that they can have when running the football.
A good example where you see a lot of eight men in the box is when you watch the Vikings, and Adrian Peterson has a very difficult time running that day because the other team is crowding the box, they say, or putting eight men in a box.
Okay.
Is this helpful at all?
Yes, it is. I hope it is for the listeners more, though, than me.
Is it helpful to you?
Yes, okay. This is working. What is an audible, and how are audibles determined?
You're the football player on this one.
I mean, the general description of an audible is just, as an offense, as a quarterback especially, if you get up to the line of scrimmage before the play and you see something in the defense that you think you can exploit, or if you see something in the defense where you say, boy, the play we have called is really not going to work here, you audible or you change the play at the line of scrimmage. And a lot of times it's something pretty subtle, whether it's changing the direction that you want to go, or, you know, changing one passing route. But an audible is just changing the play at the line of scrimmage, and a lot of times it's because you don't think the play that you have called is going to work.
And just to expound on that, the quarterback may see something in terms of exploitation which may change a running play to a passing play into a running play. Or the play he called has a tight end doing a pass pattern, but then they do the eight men in a box, or they bring somebody up who's going to blitz, and he needs more. The quarterback knows he's going to need more protection, so he'll call a change in the play, an audible, where he makes sure that the tight end stays in and blocks.
I'm pretty sure I know what blitz is, but I'm not sure if everybody knows what blitz is.
blitz is when the defense sends linebackers or defensive backs when normally nothing's normal, but normally they wouldn't. You know, third down they blitz a lot of teams blitz. It's not unusual for a team to do what's called a run blitz on second down, where they're going to make sure that the linebackers get up field as opposed to staying back and waiting for the play to come to them.
Are there any other odd terms that are used?
Off the top of my head, I can't really think of any, I guess.
What's a pooch kick?
Do I want to know?
It's not kicking a dog.
A pooch kick is basically when your team is punting the ball and you might either be worried about punting it into the end zone, or you could be worried about the opponent having a very dangerous returner back receiving the punt. But a pooch kick is basically where you kick the ball very high in the air, but not necessarily as far down the field as you normally would. Basically, it's used for either field position or just to take another person out of the return game.
And on kickoffs, they have squib kicks, which do basically the same thing as a pooch kick. He's nodding yes.
Differences between college football and NFL football.
NFL, you have the best players coming out of college. College football, you have, you know, a really high-quality athlete. I'll use Taj Boyd. He's the quarterback at Clemson. Probably be one of the top 10 players picked. It's not to say that he's playing against inferior competition now, but you see the people across from him will not all be in the NFL next year. Maybe none of them will be. I like to make the analogy to the fact that you're playing against a political science major. You see what I'm saying? When you're playing in the NFL, you're playing against everybody who's in the NFL. You see what I'm saying?
Is the game played any differently between college and pro?
I mean, there's different rules. There's kind of subtle changes in rules, like for instance, in college football, if you pick up a first down on a play, the clock stops until the ball is reset. In the NFL, the clock continues to run all the time unless you go out of bounds. But just kind of subtle rules like that, where it's hard to notice if you're not really an avid fan or if you're not paying attention, but they are there.
Maybe next year we'll do a 200-level class.
Okay.
So, yeah. But pass interference. In college, it's a 15-yard penalty from where the ball was. So if you're on the 50-yard line, there's a penalty downfield for pass interference. The ball then goes up 15 yards to the 35-yard line, and the offense has first down and 10 from there. In the NFL, pass interference is called where the penalty happened. So on a long play, you know, it could be a 30-yard penalty. Okay, again, just using the 50-yard line as an example, you're going towards the end zone. There's pass interference somewhere in and around the 10-yard line. That's where the ball's going to end up. Okay, so there's a couple of the little subtle differences between the two. Generally speaking, there's a trend in college football called the read option that's kind of bleeding into the NFL. I think that's going to kind of go away over time because it puts the quarterbacks in too much danger. A lot of these teams invest a lot of money in quarterbacks and don't want to see them get hurt.
What is a read option?
Oh, God. The read option is usually run out of the one or two formations we discussed earlier in the show, when I hope you were listening, the shotgun or the pistol, okay? Then the quarterback will take the snap, and he will appear to be handing it off to the running back, okay? Now, during that stage of appearing to hand it off, he could still hand it off, the quarterback, or he could keep the ball himself and either start running for himself, or there may be another option for him to pass the ball downfield.
Once in a while, you see everybody get together and they do this thing called huddle. Mm-hmm. Pros and cons.
The pros are, you literally get back into like a small 20-second meeting and the play is called, which is basically an assignment if you were in a classroom. And every player has their assignment. The offensive linemen have certain blocking schemes, patterns, duties, if you will. The receivers know what routes they're going to run. The running backs are going to know if they're going to do play action or protect the quarterback or even have the ball handed off to them. So, I mean, those are the benefits of huddling. So when you do the no huddle, what's some of the benefits of that?
Well, basically, if you're not going to huddle between every play, it's because you want to be moving quickly. You don't want the defense to be able to make substitutions, or you want to, you know, catch him off guard. I will say that I am an advocate of having a huddle in between every play, because it just cuts down the chance of somebody not hearing the play call, or somebody making, you know, a kind of a silly penalty, whether it's a false start or anything like that. But, you know, it basically just depends on the coach and what they want to do. But you're seeing the no huddle thing a lot more in college football these days. And then in the NFL, there's this offense where it's not really a no huddle offense, but they don't necessarily huddle between every play. They kind of get up to the line of scrimmage to make the defense think that, oh, we can't make any substitutions because they're going to be going really quick. But then once they get up there, they kind of back off, get their play called, and then run the play again.
And with the no huddle, for the people just kind of looking in, the plays are signaled in by two or three people on the sideline. Okay, so that what Chris was mentioning is, you know, there could be a signal that's missed, which could just, you know, if a guard misses the wrong signal, he could be going left when he was supposed to be going right. The receiver was supposed to go long when all of a sudden he just turned his route off after 5 yards and things like that. So the huddle, you know, everything's there. It should be clear. It does give the defense a chance to set up, but it's been, you know, it's been proven successful literally for decades.
Sometimes the coach makes the calls, but then the players can make the calls or the plays.
Well, then that's when the player's audible, which Chris discussed earlier.
Right. Just making sure.
Yeah, I mean, coaches, you know, their livelihood is in the hands of, in college anyway, 18 to 22-year-olds. NFL, you can have a little bit higher expectation and get angry at them a little more easily.
Because they get paid for it.
Because they get paid.
Did we miss anything?
I think we did a pretty good job. I mean, if you didn't know a thing about football, I think, what do you think?
I definitely think that if someone was listening with no football knowledge,
we gave them something.
They could watch a game this weekend and say, I kind of understand what's going on.
Well, good. I think we're done here. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Doug Westerman and Chris Wanless for visiting with us about Football 101. You've been listening to Culture Click with Terry Tenseth.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.